teach you another way of contemplation, another vipassana called contemplation of mind. It is very important to know how to contemplate your mind. During Buddha's time, there was an old man. He entered into Buddha Sasana to become a monk when he was old. So when he became a monk, the teacher, Mahathera, the senior monk, taught him to learn by heart all the rules, 227 rules for a monk. So he learned really hard. He faced a lot of difficulties because of old age. After he had learned all the 227, another teacher taught him Abhidhamma, which is more complicated. 89 types of consciousness, 52 mental factors, and 28 rupa. So he said, no. But in the beginning, he tried very hard. Then he know, owing to his old age, he just cannot handle, he cannot manage. Then he told the monk, I prefer this rope rather than learn all this mental factors, consciousness, rupa. No. He said, I prefer this rope. So, and the Buddha, Buddha know his mind. And Buddha came to him. I know it's very difficult for you as an old person to learn all these things. But can you learn just one thing? 2 to 7 too many. Abhidhamma also too complicated. You just learn one thing. Can you do it or not? And the old man was so happy. No, only one, of course I can. Just one. Okay, then Buddha said, contemplate your mind. Just one thing. You can become arahant. So, if you feel that, wow, so many mental factors, I can't even see one, you know? And this feeling and this consciousness and this perception are so close to each other, I can't even know which is perception, which is consciousness. No. If you feel it's too complicated for you, then you learn like the old monk, just one. Contemplation of mind. Okay. So this contemplation of mind, Buddha taught in Mahasatipatthana Sutta, the four foundations of mindfulness. I would like to read for you first, how to contemplate the mind. Okay. Here, a bhikkhu, a monk, understands mind affected by lust as mind affected by lust. He understands a mind unaffected by lust as mind unaffected by lust. He understands mind affected by hate as mind affected by hate, and mind unaffected by hate as mind unaffected by hate. Okay, such a precise instruction. Do you know how to meditate? What is this? My unaffected by hate as my unaffected by hate. But Buddha just teaches such precise, such short, brief instruction. So how can you understand the sutta without teacher? This is why teacher is important. Although Buddha is our only teacher, but Buddha teaches such a profound dharma to intelligent people. We are not so intelligent. We cannot understand what is mind affected by hate as mind affected by hate. We just cannot understand. Okay. Let's say, all of us have ill will, aversion. So when aversion arises in us, instead of understand mind at that moment, the mind is affected by hate, as mind affected by hate, we grasp this hate as my hate, my hate. I am angry. Angry, I, anger is I, is mine, anger as myself. Right, correct or not? Yes or no? Yes. Therefore, we cannot understand a mind affected by hate as a mind affected by hate owing to your grasping to the hate as I, my, myself. And the nature, Buddha said, sabbe sankhara anicca. All formations including mind and body, all the mental factors, aversion, lust, delusion, everything, sabbe except nibbana, all formations are impermanent. So the anger, the ill will, the hate is also impermanent. Is also subject to change, subject to destruction. However, because of your grasping to the hate as I, my, myself, you cannot see the change. You interrupt the phenomena. Not phenomena interrupt you. You, your reaction, your impulse, your reaction interrupt the arising and passing away of that ill will. Therefore, you keep the ill will for 20 years, never disappear. Your ill will remain there all the time, owing to your grasping the ill will as I, as mine. So when you grasp, when you cling, or you grasp, or you identify ill will as I, or aversion, or hate as I, my, myself, do you suffer according to your aversion or not? Yes or no? Definitely. You suffer owing to your identification or grasping the aversion, the hate as mine, my, myself. Just like you hold a fireball, you hold a fireball. The fireball burns you. And how to let go of? How can you free from being burned by the fireball? How? Throw it away, right? Let go of it. Everybody knows. But when your anger arises, why don't you throw it away? When the anger arises in you, the ill will arises in you, aversion arises in you, you are burned by the anger, right? Yes or no? Then why don't you throw it away? So you grasp it because of your grasping to the anger as I, my, myself, therefore you are burned again and again and never learn. Burn 100 times also, want to be burned again. never learned how to let go of the anger. So next time, imagine you are holding the fireball. How to free yourself from that being burned by the fire of anger. So when you get angry, mentally note, the mind affected by hate, as a mind affected by hate. Learn this. Put in your computer brain, okay? When anger arises, know, oh, the mind now. The mind is affected by hate as a mind affected by hate. Not I, not my, not myself. As you understand, hate is just mental factor. And you also know mental factor is impermanence as non-self. If you identify this anger as my, myself, you will never free from suffering. No one can save you because you yourself grasp it to as I mind myself. How can people help you? You only have to let go of it, then you are you immediately free from that burning sensation caused by anger. So this is what Buddha say. Here a bhikkhu understand the mind affected by hate as a mind affected by hate. It's just a mental state. It's just a mental factor arise at this moment. If you don't identify it, if you don't grasp it as my hate, or hate as I, hate as myself, the hate will pass away very fast. Because all formations are subject to change. The hate won't last long. This is the nature of all formations. But owing to your grasping, you hold it so tightly, you don't want to let go of it. How can it disappear? It cannot disappear owing to your grasping firmly to it as myself. Therefore, you will bear the grudge for 20 years, 30 years, maybe until next life. You see the enemy again. I remember past life. You have done me wrong. No, it's as a practitioner, it is very unwise because you carry the grudge whenever you go. It's very unwise and you hurt yourself first. You make yourself unhappy first. Okay, so when the hate arises, you must have concentration and mindfulness to know, okay, the hate has arisen and the mind now is affected by hate as a mind affected by hate. Just contemplate in this way. Then you don't have the perception of self anymore. Know how to do it? Tomorrow I will give you guided meditation about this contemplation of mind. Okay, see whether you can contemplate it or not. Okay, so same, a monk understand mind as affected, mind affected by lust, and as mind affected by lust. Sometimes your mind is overwhelmed, beset by lust. Maybe lust for the lustful object. So you must able to know at this moment the mind is affected by lust. If you do not recognize in this way and you identify this lust as I, myself, then you will act. You will act according to the lust. And when you act according to the lust, you perform the unskillful action that leave behind karmic energy. And when this karmic energy ripens, you will bear the severe result. Therefore, you must know how to contemplate the mind. Mind is forerunner. Body and speech listen to the mind. Without this volition first, intention first, the body cannot act. So if you want to eradicate all defilements of the mind, contemplate the mind. If you can know this one thing, enough for the whole life. Your practice is made, will be very mature. Just like the old man, he cannot learn so many things. Just one, this one. And this one is the most difficult one. Because mind is so fast. And in the long of samsara, round of rebirth, we have been identifying all our mind, all our mental factors as myself already. It has been very deep rooted in our mental stream. Therefore, it's not easy to contemplate of your mind. It's more easy to contemplate the body. Not easy to contemplate the mind. Okay. And Buddha continued to say, he understands mind affected by delusion as mind affected by delusion, and mind unaffected by delusion as mind unaffected by delusion. You understand contracted mind as contracted mind. Contracted mind is like slow and topper. The mind become contracted, slow and topper. When you feel slow and topper, you feel drowsiness. I think few of you will see drowsiness is just a mental state. You will immediately identify drowsiness as I am drowsy. You never see drowsiness as mental state. Anybody see drowsiness as a mental state and does not identify drowsiness as I or my or myself? Any of you? Okay, good. Good. So next time drowsiness arises, just look at it. It's a very effective way to for me. Very moment you feel drowsiness, just look at this drowsiness. Then the mind immediately becomes clear. And also by this way of looking at the drowsiness, you do not identify drowsiness as mine, as myself. You just know at this moment the mind is affected by drowsiness, as a mind affected by drowsiness. Drowsiness is not mine, not I, not myself. Okay. Then he understands distracted mind as distracted mind. Meaning when the mind is restless, restless, distracted mind. So when the mind is restless, you understand it's just a mental state of restlessness. And this distracted mind is not I, not mine, not myself. And he understands concentrated mind as concentrated mind. Okay, now we have been practicing concentration for many days. So when the concentration becomes good, then you say, oh, my concentration is very good. My concentration is very good. Immediately you identify, my concentration is very good. This is very automatically, because we identify everything as I, mine, myself. If you don't identify mindfulness or concentration as I, mine, myself, you feel don't know how to live the world. Almost don't know how to live this. If it's no self, you don't know how to survive sometimes. So next time, when your concentration is good, you know the mind, you know the concentrated mind, you understand concentrated mind as concentrated mind. So you will not feel so proud. And you will not compare with other people. And as you know, concentration is non-self. I already asked you to discern the mental factor. All mental factors are not a self. So when you understand concentrated mind as concentrated mind, you free yourself from grasping the concentration. Because concentration up and down, not permanent one. You experience yourself. And also you understand concentration is conditional, not a self. When the condition is there, concentration develop. When the condition is not there, concentration cannot develop. So understand it, concentrated mind as concentrated mind. Okay. And next one, he understands unconcentrated mind as unconcentrated mind. Sometimes the mind is not concentrated well. After the best sitting, the concentration suddenly drop to the worst one, then the mind becomes unconcentrated. If you can contemplate unconcentrated mind as unconcentrated mind, you will not get disappointed. You just see it as a mental factor. It's beyond your control. Concentration is sometimes beyond your control. And sometimes during the meditation, your mind will be beset by remorse. Remorse. Then you forget to contemplate your mind. Then keep on thinking the wrong deed you have performed. Keep on thinking, indulging in it, then all the concentration gone. And not only that, you feel sorrowful and become very agitated, very restless, because you do not contemplate a mind affected by remorse as a mind affected by remorse. You identify, you grasp, you cling this remorse as myself, and suffer accordingly, although you are sitting there very quiet, but the mind is suffering, yeah, because you don't know how to contemplate the mind. So it's very important to learn this one. Eh? If you have been meditating for 10 years, 20 years, and yet you do not know how to contemplate your mind, I can say it is a great loss. And you see, I have been practicing for 20 years. Why my character never changed? Never change, remain the same. Why? Because you don't know how to contemplate the mind. Because you identify everything as I, mine, myself. So if you really want to change your behavior, if you think your behavior is not so good or not improved, then try to contemplate your mind. Okay, so Buddha only give a few state of mind, but you can extend it. Jealousy mind as jealousy mind. Rejoice mind, metta. Okay, metta mind as metta mind. You say today I do metta. Oh, very good, very happy, very peaceful. Then you immediately identify the happiness as I, mind, myself already. You should say, oh, happiness, mind, the mind affected by happiness as the mind affected by happiness. So after each sitting, that's why I tell you, after each sitting, contemplate, let go of the good experience. Huh? Contemplate it. Metta is also mental factor. So think, loving mind as loving mind. Today I practice metta, I feel good, I have loving mind. Then contemplate a loving mind as a loving mind. Only then you will not identify, only then you will not cling to that loving mind as I, mind, myself. Although I tell you, I can tell you the whole night, but tomorrow you forget everything. Immediately emotion comes, you grasp it again, identify it again. Therefore, practice makes perfect. What I share with you, you have to practice, then gradually become perfect. If not, no matter how much, how long I talk, it's not beneficial. Okay. So after that, Buddha go to insight. Buddha say, in this way, he abides contemplating mind as mind internally. Or he abides contemplating mind as mind externally. Nowadays, many teachers only teach internally, they do not teach externally. It's very important to contemplate the mind externally. Let's say when somebody mistreat you, somebody is very unkind to you, and this person, they say, is very hot-tempered person. He always mistreat you, unkind to you. So you get very angry. Sometimes instead of contemplate yourself, the anger, the mind affected by hate as mind affected by hate because he mistreat you. But you also can contemplate his mind. It's called externally. Because he's so angry, he mistreat you. So you contemplate his mind. His mind is the mind also affected by anger as a mind affected by anger. When you see his mind as a mind affected by anger, you do not see a person, a being, a self. Then very soon you let go the aversion. It's because you see him as a person, then your anger finds foot hold to arise. When you see non-person just a mind affected by anger, as a mind affected by anger, your anger has find no foothold to arise. Therefore, it's very important also to contemplate externally. Internally, not enough. Sometimes the suffering can be very strong, caused by other people. So let go of internally, contemplate externally as a mind affected by delusion, as a mind affected by anger or lust. And when you contemplate internally and externally, you understand sometimes your mind also affected by lust, your mind also affected by craving, by anger, by delusion. Then when you see other people's mind affected by anger and delusion, you can accept. Because you also not free from anger. You also not free from hate, not free from lust. How can you expect other people free from lust, free from anger? So in this way, contemplate internally and externally, you easily accept other people's fault. You can forgive them. You can accept their fault. This is how it's important to contemplate externally. And to your beloved person, if you contemplate externally, then you will not get so attached to them. Because you see them as a mind only, not a person. For example, your daughter, your husband, your spouse, you love them too much, very much. Attachment causes suffering, you must understand. The more you love, the more you suffer. So sometimes in order to lessen your suffering owing to strong attachment, then you see them as mind, as a mental state, as a mind. This is how you contemplate externally. If you see it as a person, a being, then attachment grows, aversion grows, and so on. Okay? So Buddha says, he advises contemplating mind as mind externally, or he advises contemplating mind as mind both internally and externally. Sometimes internal, sometimes external, sometimes internal, sometimes external. Only then your inside knowledge will become strong, become comprehensive. Okay. Or else, he advises contemplating in mind its arising factors. This is dependent origination. Not only see mind as mind, then you also contemplate the cause for the arising of that mind state. For example, you contemplate hate as hate, a mind affected by hate as a mind affected by hate. Then later on, you contemplate its arising factors, which is discerning dependent origination, discerning cause and effect. The formula of dependent origination says, when this exists, that comes to be. With the cessation of this, that ceases. So, if you contemplate cause and effect, the non-self nature becomes even more clear. So he advises contemplating in mind its arising factors, or he advises contemplating in mind its vanishing factors. So when the cause vanishes, then the effect, the lustful mind or hateful mind or remorse mind or restless mind also disappear. When the cause disappears, the effect disappears. So you contemplate its arising factor and its vanishing factor. Or he abides contemplating in mind both its arising and vanishing factors. And this is insight of arising and passing away. Udaya baya jnana. The insight of arising and passing away is the gate. It's the gate door. It's the gate to liberation. So after contemplating cause and effect, then you see arising and passing away, both cause and effect. Then you reach the state called insight of arising and passing away. If you want to achieve Nibbana, you have to experience the insight of arising and passing away. Without experiencing the knowledge of arising and passing away, realization of Nibbana is not possible. Then, or else, mindfulness that there is mind is simply established in him to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and higher mindfulness. Now, this sentence is very important. If you cannot understand how to contemplate the mind, you read this sentence even for 10 years, you may not be able to understand. I read it again. Or else, mindfulness that there is mind. There is only mind, not I, not myself. There is only mind, okay? Mindfulness know that is mind only. So, mindfulness, or else mindfulness that there is mind, inverted comma, is simply established in him to the extent necessary for bare knowledge. What is this bare knowledge? Bare knowledge means wisdom. Wisdom knows, you are mindful of your mental state. Again and again, to the extent the insight arises to know that is mind only, not myself. What it means. Got it? Got it or not? So you mindful, one time mindfulness not enough. You mindful, okay, last affected by last, but you still cling to the last as my last, although mentally you not. Mentally you not, okay, a mind affected by hate as a mind affected by hate. This is mindfulness. But your mindfulness is not strong enough for the insight to arise to know that mind, that hate mind is not a person, is not I, not myself. So you keep on aware of that, let's say, lustful mind as lustful mind, hateful mind as hateful mind, until your mindfulness is so strong to the extent for the insight knowledge to arise to know it is just a mind, not a person, not a being, not yourself. Understand or not? Okay? This is what the Buddha mean. So, or else mindfulness that there is mind is simply established in him to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and mindfulness. And he abides independent, not clinging to anything in the world. Here, world. Buddha here, not clinging to anything in the world. The world means internal five, internal mind and external mind. He does not cling to his own mind as well as other people's mind. So he abides independent, not clinging to anything in the world. This is how a bhikkhu abides contemplating mind as mind. Now you know how to practice already. Put into practice tomorrow. I give you guided meditation. Okay. I will give you an example how to contemplate your mind. Let's say, while watching the pain, instead of look at the pain, look at the mind. What is your reaction to the pain? Some people only endure the pain, endure, they don't know how to see the mind. Instead of look at the physical pain, please look at your reaction. What is your reaction towards the pain? Aversion, then contemplate aversion, a mind is affected by hate as a mind affected by hate. So quick, you can apply already, right? Rather than suffer, endure the pain, look at the physical pain and let the aversion arise in you again and again, and you gain nothing except aversion. No, therefore we are not skillful. We are not skillful in contemplation. So if you want to explain this, you sit until the rice arises in you, until the pain arises in you. Okay? You can sit tonight until the pain arises in you, then don't look at the pain. Look at the mind. See how the mind reacts to the pain. So if it's aversion, then mentally see the pain, contemplate it as a mind affected by hate, as a mind affected by hate. See it again and again, again and again, until you reach a point that a mind affected by hate is not myself. It's not a person. It's not mine. Then your meditation is considered good. Or when you look at a pain, you have equanimity. Then also contemplate the mind, equanimous mind as equanimous mind. See what reaction you have towards the pain, then contemplate that state as it is, as it really is. Not mine, not I, not myself. Understand? Okay. Wait first. So if you can using the pain to contemplate the mind, then the pain won't bother you anymore. In fact, I can teach you this a few days ago, but too many things to teach you. So the best one, the last day, always the best. So those who can stay up to last day is always benefited. And while you are observing that reaction to the pain, you regard yourself by a third party observing other people's pain. Sometimes if you too severe the pain, you just separate yourself, look at the pain just like another party look at the pain. Don't think the pain is yours. If you think the pain is yours, then you cannot bear it. I'm trying to give you many different ways to observe the pain. Then if there's any emotions arise in you, in the course of practice, we have a lot of emotion coming up. Why? Why in our daily life not so many emotions, but in the practice so many emotion coming up? Because in your daily life, the life is so busy. All your emotions are kept in the corner. Now the mind is so quiet, still, clear, then you become sensitive. So you can sense each minor emotion that arises in you. So when the emotion arises in you, recognize them. Just like emotion including anger, greed, joy, fear, remorse and depression and so on. So recognize all this as they arise. Let them be what they are, merely impersonal mental events. However, identity view stubbornly remains intact, contaminating our mental stream, and a habitual reaction to almost everything that arises as body and mind. If delusion leads us to spontaneously cling at emotions as mine or myself, the remedy is to disidentify and see phenomena as impersonal. So whatever emotion arise in you, follow what Buddha say? Am I affected by jealousy? Is a mind affected by jealousy? Am I affected by hate? Is a mind affected by hate? Disidentify it, dispersonalize it. Again and again, 100 times, not one time, okay? Repeatedly until you realize, yes, it's just a mental state, not a person, not myself. Then you will gain, you will experience abundant happiness. Now you start to taste the Dharma. So look upon all this mental state or all this emotion dispassionately. See whatever arises as foreign, as a third party, as empty or devoid of self. In this way, one frees oneself from entanglement. And from a psychological point of view, this way of looking at things allows one to step back, and one separates emotionally and is thereby relieved of the worry and fear that, in truth, does not belong to one. So in reality, physical and mental phenomena momentarily arise, perform a function, and naturally fall away. This is the nature of all emotion. Arise and pass away, arise and pass away. But if you grasp it, if you cling to it, then you cannot see it's passing away, owing to your grasping. If you don't grasp it, you just look at it, then you can see the nature of arising and passing away. It's because of your interruption by way of identity, by way of craving, clinging, that phenomena cannot. Because you hold it, therefore you cannot see it's passing away. So this is how to contemplate the mind. Please learn this skill. If you can learn this skill, the life becomes a happy one. Okay, thank you. Any question? Yes. Just now I answered already. Okay. Your question is so complicated.
Yeah.
Say it again. Craving, when craving is less, clinging is intense craving. So when your mind, let's say, I give a simple example, when your eye come to contact with food, then pleasant feeling, your delicious food, the pleasant feeling arises in you, then craving follows. Clinging means stretching your hand to grasp that food. It's called clinging. So stretching, craving is at the mind state. Because of pleasant feeling, you know, then craving arises at the mental level. But clinging is the intense, clinging lead to becoming, clinging lead to action. Because your mind is beset by strong clinging, you have to act already. Without acting, you are uncomfortable. So that stretching the hand is a manifestation of clinging. And that stretching the hand, holding the food, is becoming action. It's already become action. This is how craving becomes, conditions clinging.
And how about for other more less obvious ones, like clinging or perception or clinging to
the person? You cling to the person. When we say perception, usually it's perception of the distorted perception of happiness, permanent and non and a self. So you cling to this type of perception that leads suffering, that leads to suffering. Okay. Sadhu. Tomorrow morning, I will give you 8 o'clock or 8:30. 8 o'clock. I will give you guided meditation how to contemplate your mind according to the lecture I give today.